We've got some stretch run quarterbacks that you need to take note of. And there's an NFC West receiver who's currently fumbling the bag, but I'm going to tell you if he can stack up that paper and take it straight to the bank. Let's get it. What's up, fantasy people? You are back with the True North Fantasy Pod. Trav here, hosting and West coasting, breaking down the fantasy landscape in hopes that I can inform, empower, and entertain you towards making sound fantasy decisions. Thanks for joining, everybody. Make sure you go give that Macho Man Randy Savage elbow drop to the subscribe button. Oh, yeah. The cream always rises to the top, and together we can be the cream. Make sure you go follow on social media at True North FFB and all that jazz cabbage. We're back. Missed a couple weeks here. Halloween with four kids is an absolute shit show. So that's what was happening that week. And I've had a little bit of a toothache since then. Not a consequence of Halloween, more a coincidence, but nonetheless, a little bit hard to talk when your mouth hurts like crazy. So back now on the same bat show, the same bat channel. Like I said, please subscribe. And can you believe that it is already week 11? This week, as usual, going to take some observations from week 10, project them forward to week 11 and beyond. We'll do some trend spotting on the Seahawks puzzling wide receiver room. We're going to look at some week 10 performers at the running back position and talk about their stretch run outlooks. But we are going to start with the ever-changing quarterback landscape. And we're going to go straight to America's team with Dak Prescott and the Dallas Cowboys. Dak dropped 400 in week 10 with four touchdowns. Big one. He is up to quarterback 7 on the season after a terrible early season for Dak. Really has been a tale of two seasons in those first 5 weeks. So we're through 10 weeks, split it down the center. It's 5-5. In those first 5 weeks, Dak was the quarterback 17. And in the 5 weeks since, he's the quarterback 1, averaging over 30 points per game in that span. In the first half, let's look at a little bit of splits here. So first half versus second half. In the first half of the season, 212 yards per game. Second half, 338 passing yards per game. 6.63 yards per attempt, 9.67 yards per attempt in the second half. Completion percentage of 69.4% in those first 5 weeks, 72% thereafter. 5 touchdowns to 4 interceptions. And in these past 5, he has 12 touchdowns to 2 interceptions. So it's been a bit of an astronomical improvement for Dak, and we really like to see that in this offense because the passing game wasn't working and Tony Pollard was inefficient, and we really weren't able to draw much out of this Dallas offense, but we're starting to get there now, even though we haven't necessarily seen that much from Tony P just yet. We're seeing it from Dak, obviously seeing that from CD Lamb and a little bit from Brandon Cooks as well. So it's positive signs for that passing game and lots of good stuff for Dak, right? He's seeing less pressure, targeting his first read at a 75% clip, whereas in that first half of the season, that was 65%. And he's improved his completion percentage over expectation by over 8%. And so that is massive for his ability to get it to his wide receivers and for them to see production. I think for Dak moving up into that quarterback 7 standing, the biggest contributors have been the rushing work and the deep passing. He's averaging over 4 points per game as a runner over the past 5 weeks. And previous to that, he was averaging less than 1 point per game as a runner. He does have 2 touchdowns rushing in the past 3 weeks, so we'd love to see that keep up. Being a little bit more opportunistic near the goal line, being a little bit more opportunistic on third downs when he sees that lane, not trying to force something, but getting that first down. So really good to see from Dak because that really buoys his fantasy production and allows for us to be able to eat maybe a dip in some of the passing. But that hasn't actually been the case for the passing, and that's mostly been because of the deep work. He's averaging 5.75 deep passes per game since week 6. And in the 5 weeks prior to that, he was only averaging 2.4. And that's heavily, heavily influenced the increase in production alone. His deep completion percentage is up to 60% from 38. And 4 of those 12 touchdowns in the 5 week span that we've just had have been on deep passes. Biggest part, though, he's averaging 70 yards per game more alone on deep passes. So just deep passing, he's getting 70 yards per game more, and that is huge for this fantasy production. All right, so we've looked at what he's been. Let's look at what he could be going forward. The schedule doesn't look too bad. This week is really tough against Carolina. They're a top 5 defense at defending the pass as well as fantasy scoring to quarterbacks. But the four teams after that, Washington, Seattle, Philadelphia, and Buffalo, are all bottom 12 in fantasy points allowed to quarterbacks over the past 5 weeks. Washington and Philly especially are just like cheesecake matchups. So I would say that Dak is back on the map and he's putting everybody on notice as that top 10 fantasy quarterback again. And it's really nice to have him in there with all the injuries and the expectations that we had coming into the season. I got a lot of super flex teams that rely on Dak and they're actually able to rely on him now as opposed to him being a detriment to being able to win games. So love to see it in Dallas. That offense is humming a little bit more as far as the passing category, I guess, not so much the running work for Tony P, but I think that could come back into play with some schedule benefits as well. Couple of kind of unsuspected names in the quarterback forefront are Josh Dobbs and Sam Howell, both impressing as of late. We're going to start with Dobbs. It's been a pretty weird season. He kind of came out of couch potato mode and started for the Arizona Cardinals at the beginning of the season. And then he got traded to the Minnesota Vikings, had a killer week, just absolutely not supposed to start, came off the bench and had a wicked week in week 9, week 10, great week as well. And with all that turmoil and turbulence, he is the quarterback 6 on the season through 10 weeks. It's been incredible. It's been really incredible. And all of it has been on the back of rushing production. The passing doesn't look great. Only 5 games this season has he gone over even 250 passing yards. 0 games with a 3-banger in the touchdown department, and he's got 3 games with 0 passing touchdowns. So kind of what we expected from Josh Dobbs, right? He's not going to be this kind of otherworldly passer, but we didn't expect the increase in rushing production that we would get out of him. He's averaging over 6.5 fantasy points per game as a runner, which is 4th best in the league behind Anthony Richardson, Lamar Jackson, and Jalen Hurts. And he's got 5 rushing touchdowns on the season, which is super nice for that fantasy production. So yeah, it's been really, really good. The rushing stuff, I expected to keep up as well. You look at those touchdowns, only one of those came on a goal line carry. So it's not like those have been cheapies anyway. He's really taking advantage and being opportunistic. And I think that's a product of his environment, right? He's been on teams where he's not super familiar with the weapons around him or maybe the offense, right? And so when shit breaks down, he's resorting to his legs and not making bad decisions. And that's what we really like to see from those kind of streamer plus guys, is we like to see a guy who's not going to give us negative points with turnovers, and we like to see a guy who's going to be able to give us some sort of fantasy floor. And the cherry on top here is that the fantasy floor is via rushing, which might be a little bit more stable than Josh Dobbs' passing work. So startable option the rest of the way, basically. The schedule is a little bit of a mixed bag, but that rushing work doesn't make me as worried for it. The Broncos, Bears, and Raiders are up next. There is a bye sandwiched in there, so that kind of sucks for your stretch run. But those Bears are a money matchup for quarterbacks. Broncos and Raiders have been pretty good passing defenses as of late. But Josh Dobbs has scored at least 24 fantasy points in 3 straight weeks, and that rushing work makes me a little bit less worried about those bad matchups. So fire up Josh Dobbs on a team where he's not only getting the most opportunity that he's going to get, he's also got probably the best weapons that he's ever gotten consistent playing time with in Justin Jefferson, Jordan Addison, Justin Jefferson coming back this week. Hell yeah. But yeah, wheels up for Josh Dobbs as a solid fantasy producer. Sam Howell doing it in completely different ways, but he has been awesome too. He's a top 5 quarterback right now, got 300 yards in 3 straight games, and he has 3 games on the season where he's hit 3 touchdowns. So there is some kind of spike week touchdown upside in Sam Howell. We know he had that 30 banger a few weeks back against the Eagles. And just like Josh Dobbs, he's going to be a solid starter for you for the rest of the season. All of that stuff I talked about was while he's getting murdered behind that offensive line. He has a terrible defense and a team that just traded away 2 great pass rushers who really could have helped them stay in games and capitalize on this good play from Sam Howell. But with all of that, I think the Washington going commandos are just going to stay bad. And that's going to be good for Sam Howell's fantasy prospects. Problem is with Sam Howell is, like, yes, he's going to be a solid fantasy starter, but I don't think he's necessarily matchup proof. He's got some really tough ones coming up on the slate this week against the Giants. Super sweet matchup. But after that, he's got Dallas. He's got Miami. He's got that bye week, which really hurts. He's got the Rams, Jets, and Niners. All of those are below average to bad matchups for fantasy quarterbacks. So while I'm not pumping the brakes on him being a decent fantasy starter for the rest of the season, I'm also not expecting 300 yards and 3 touchdowns on a weekly basis, because I think he has been capitalizing on those good matchups and the great game scripts. And I don't necessarily, like, I'm not anointing him as a franchise quarterback like some people are just yet. I think he's played well, but I think, you know, like I said, lots of dominoes have kind of fallen his way to reach that top five standing. For me, I think if I have championship contending hopes on my fantasy team, I don't think I'm really going to be hanging my hat on elite Sam Howell production. So beware a little bit, but if it's dire straits and the waiver wire is looking pretty barren and your trade options are limited, Sam Howell can be a solid producer for you down the stretch if you've got one of those offenses where your wide receivers and running backs can sort of insulate some potential bad quarterback production. So just be ready for it is all I'm saying with Sam Howell. Couple quick notes on quarterbacks here. Kyler Murray returned from that injury. He was the quarterback 13 on the week with 18 fantasy points, got the touchdown on the ground, and I think he really does need that to maintain fantasy value. Just something we're going to keep an eye on going forward, because I think if he does continue to use those legs, he could have some league winning factor down the stretch. Does Kyler Murray, that schedule is kind of tough, but it's not necessarily insurmountable if he can get that fantasy production the way that we need him to. CJ Stroud, just kind of another big ups shout out to CJ Stroud, the rookie quarterback, because I think he has ascended into kind of that tier of elite non-running quarterbacks. So your Joe Burrows and your Justin Herberts, I see CJ Stroud in that tier. If anybody's wondering how to evaluate them, he's definitely there. We've been hyping him up all season, basically saying that we hadn't really seen his real upside, right? Because before the past couple of weeks, he was topping out at 2 touchdowns, hadn't really had any big yardage weeks necessarily. But that week 10 win against the Cincinnati Bengals in outdueling Joe Burrow was kind of that, I guess week 10 was probably his coming out party, but week 9 was probably that coming out party. But I think week 10 is really where he was kind of thrust into the spotlight because he was going against Joe Burrow and that Bengals offense in what was a really fun game to watch. So not necessarily a fantasy take that he outdueled Joe Burrow, but just encouraging signs for his long-term outlook as that franchise quarterback. Back-to-back weeks, over 350 yards, had 5 touchdowns in week 9 against the Buccaneers. In week 10, he only had 1 passing touchdown, but he had a rushing touchdown, which we hadn't seen from him this season. And I'm not expecting a bunch of rushing work necessarily from him, but if he can kind of do a little Dak Prescott opportunistic around the goal line stuff, I think that can be really nice for what he could do as a fantasy quarterback. I put out a tweet earlier this week just about kind of his increase in deep passing. Over the past 5 weeks, he has the second highest deep passing percentage at 16%, and that's a 10% increase over the previous 5 weeks to start the season. So he was at 6% from weeks 1 through 5, and he's at 16 over the past 5. That's been great for his fantasy production, for his wide receiver performances. What up, Tank Dell? I think the thing with Stroud and his, you know, not necessarily inability, but his lack of rushing work is that he does need to keep all of this kind of big yardage, big touchdown scoring clip up in order to maintain a top five standing. So I'm going to say that he's still kind of that back end quarterback one, even though he's performed at the top five pace the last couple of weeks, just because we're not going to get that rushing work. And I can't really put 400 yards and 4 touchdowns on any given week on a rookie's shoulders. So I'm not going to do that. And I'm just going to expect kind of back end quarterback one. But I think what is a little more safe is we have, I'm a little bit more confident that he's not just going to fall off a cliff over the back half of the season, because he's gone up against that really good team in the Bengals. He's put up those big weeks. He's getting familiar with his weapons. He is still producing when guys like Nico Collins miss a week. So really, really good signs for CJ Stroud. And I just think his profile really breeds consistency as far as quarterback fantasy production. So love to see it. Love to see it. CJ Stroud's actually kind of a good segue into our first running back on the docket, and that would be my old friend Devin Singletary. He had a nice little hit in week 10, kind of a right time, right place situation. Damian Pierce obviously went down, that offensive line started to get healthy, and lo and behold, Devin Singletary took advantage in week 10. He was the running back 3 last week with over 23 fantasy points. Pretty efficient 23 fantasy points. He needed 30 carries to reach 150 rushing yards. He did get that touchdown, though, so we like to see the Tud banger. I think previous to Damian Pierce's injury, Singletary was kind of already taking over some of that job. But in those 2 weeks since Pierce went down, it was really nice to see that they didn't have another guy come in as the second fiddle. Devin Singletary's basically gotten bell cow snaps the past 2 weeks with Damian Pierce out. And even with Damian Pierce coming back this week in week 11, in a great matchup against the Arizona Cardinals, I might add, I think Devin Singletary at the very least is like the A side in a timeshare for the Houston Texans. Truth be told, it's not the most exciting timeshare by any means, not the most exciting A side in Devin Singletary. The efficiency numbers for both Pierce and Singletary are kind of similar, both of them not being good. But Singletary is the only of the two with a 15-point PPR performance this week or this season. And he's the only one of these Texans running backs with a top 10 week on the year. So, I think it's looking good for Singletary to be kind of that 60 in a 60-40 split. And got to remember here, the Texans coaching staff isn't tied to what Damian Pierce did last season. So I don't think that really gives him any extra leash in this offense. And that's kind of played out over the early season as well. So looking like our buddy Devin Singletary is back in the fantasy mix. And even though it hasn't played out to be like, you know, super efficient just yet, I think of those two, Devin Singletary is more equipped to produce on a volume share, which is basically just saying he's more more able to give some explosive plays if that volume becomes limited. So give me single buckets as the guy to own rest of season. And this week against the Arizona Cardinals, I'm still bullish even with Damian Pierce back because I have Singletary as my running back 20. Fire him up while you can because we don't necessarily know what that split is going to look like. And I'm not saying that he's going to be efficient on lower volume because there is a high likelihood that it's an inefficient timeshare, but if any of them is going to be efficient on that timeshare, it's going to be Singletary. And I think running back 20 this week, it's just a good time to capitalize before Pierce gets really back and healthy. Couple quick notes here on running backs before we ride that out. Jonathan Taylor, it looks like that takeover has officially taken place in Indianapolis, rendering Zach Moss essentially useless, but for high-end handcuff duties. Looking at Jonathan Taylor, the main thing you got to know is just that he has almost 75% of the snaps over the past 3 weeks, 88% this past week in that German stinker against the Patriots. The production and efficiency that has been happening over those few weeks doesn't really matter in evaluating these guys because I think we always knew that Zach Moss had a bit of an expiry date. And as much as those of us who are rostering Zach Moss, and trust me, I am, we might not have wanted to admit it. I think that ship has finally sailed, unfortunately. Just with Jonathan Taylor's pedigree, like he can have some shit games, but as long as they're giving him those snaps, they're not necessarily going to pull them back heavily to reinsert Zach Moss if they've shown that they already want to kind of supplant him with Jonathan Taylor being that bell cow workload taker, I guess. But Zach Moss, love to see it. You know, if you remember back in the day on the True North pod, Ty, my former co-host, has always been a big Zach Moss truther. So I've always kind of kept an eye on what Moss has done. And he's been great while he's gotten the chance. But not looking great for the rest of the season. Only 24% of the rush attempts in those 3 weeks I mentioned. 24% of the backfield expected fantasy points. He has actually been more efficient than Jonathan Taylor since week 8 on that low volume. He's got a better yards per carry, better explosive run rate, better yards after contact per attempt. But like I said, none of that really matters. JT has that pedigree that always made this takeover inevitable. And yeah, Zach Moss has less than 3 points per game over the past 2 weeks, and I think that cements that. So one of the best handcuffs in the league, no doubt. You got to keep an eye on Moss as the handcuff. I think if you have a roster spot to spare, he's not worth it, right? He's not worth it. If Jonathan Taylor gets injured, we know that there is a top 12 running back who's going to get some targets waiting in the wings. But I don't think he's any more than just that. Another solid backup running back who needs an injury to be start worthy. And as far as Taylor, I think he slots back in as that top 12 option. He's the running back 11 in those last 3 weeks since he's been getting bell cow snaps. And that's how I'm treating the Colts backfield going forward is Jonathan Taylor's the bell cow and Zach Moss is a handcuff. But I think what Zach Moss has done has really kind of put himself in the running to be somebody's timeshare starter next year, right? So if there's a team who's looking at the free agent market after this year, Zach Moss showed that he can take on some workload. So dare I say, Zach Moss, 2024 best ball darling. Am I right? Am I right, zero RB truthers? I'd like to see it. And I'd like to see him get some more work because it's been great. If he can get the right situation, I think he can be one of those guys who presents major value in drafts next year. Okay, my guy, we got to talk about Brian Robinson in Washington. The running back won in week 10. He had over 150 total yards. I think the best part about seeing that was that more than 100 of those yards came as a receiver. Suck it, Antonio Gibson. Six receptions on six targets in week 10 for Brian Robinson, including that big old touchdown, I think 77 yards or something like that. And would you look at that? Through 10 weeks, Brian Robinson is the running back six. If you'll recall, in week 3, I dropped a video saying that I was planting my flag in him as a dark horse running back one. So I'm loving every part of this. Not going to say this is a victory lap just yet because there is a long way to go, but it's looking pretty good. With Antonio Gibson, I think like it's cool because the snaps are still only about 60-40, in Robinson's favor, but he has been producing at this top 10 clip. And we know that Antonio Gibson hasn't done shit this year on the work that he's been getting. And I think, you know, it's just been really good to see because if we can see Antonio Gibson's volume fall back even further, then I think Brian Robinson's ceiling continues to become higher. But the question is, can he keep it up even if that volume stays in the 60% realm? And I think he can. He's easily got a hold on that rushing work. He's making the most of the targets that he's getting, like 6 for 6 for 120 yards and a touchdown last week. Love it. I've kind of maintained that without that passing work being consistent, he's probably a back end running back one versus a front end running back one, but that's a very useful running back nonetheless. The schedule is a little up and down going forward for Brian Robinson, but this week against the New York Giants, I do have him as my running back 17. So like I said, he's kind of one of those running back twos who I think could sneak into the back of the top 12. He's kind of one of those weird guys who you're probably not ranking inside your top 12 on any given week, but it's all going to come out in the wash with him finishing right in that, you know, 10 to 15 range if he keeps doing what he's going to do. Love him as well because he's one of those third round rookie running backs that I was drafting at the beginning of last season. And so when those pays off, it's just absolute money in the bank. Brian Robinson has been that, right? He has been that. Five shots couldn't touch him. He took it and smiled. Can't remember what song that's from. And I don't think he took five shots, but you know what I'm saying? He took it and smiled because he is crushing. Okay, looking at probably the best tandem in the entire NFL, Jahmyr Gibbs and David Montgomery. Both of them had top 10 finishes in week 10, David Montgomery coming back from that injury. Over the past 4 weeks, Jahmyr Gibbs himself is the running back one in points per game with 27.9 points per game. Only running back in that span over 25 points per game, I will add. And then we look at Montgomery's solid production in the first 5 weeks of the year. He was the running back eight on the season with kind of Gibbs getting his footing and he battled his own injury there as well. I think moving forward for the rest of the season, it's wheels up for Jahmyr Gibbs. I tweeted earlier this week that I think he's going to be a league winner for some teams. None of his remaining matchups strike fear into fantasy running backs. And I think he can pop off even in bad matchups. I've been saying that all season long. So I think Jahmyr Gibbs is very safe and probably the safer option, whereas those roles might have been switched earlier in the season. Montgomery does give me a little bit more pause. So his early season success was on the back of heavy goal line work, but we did see in week 10 that Gibbs and Monty split red zone snaps. Gibbs had one more carry inside the 20 and one more target as well on those red zone snaps. So if that moves more into a split, I think that favors Gibbs and that makes Montgomery the guy who has the higher likelihood of potentially falling off. I don't think that fall is going to be precipitous by any means, but I think, you know, he probably dips back into that running back two area with Gibbs being that, you know, borderline running back one. Even with that week 10 performance that Montgomery had, like we got to just kind of take a look a little bit deeper, right? You're not taking away his big play, but he did have a 75-yard run in that game. And excluding the touchdown he scored on that play, that run was 40% of his fantasy points on the day. And like I said, not taking it away from him on that game, but it's not something that he's going to do consistently. He has historically been a guy who has not gotten big plays. He's only averaged an explosive run rate of 2.3% over the past two seasons. And this season so far, he's at 4.7%. So these big plays kind of outside of what Montgomery normally does. And I think that that 4.7% will just slowly start to creep down a little bit as the season goes. Totally could be wrong because this is the best situation that Montgomery's ever been in. He was in some pretty dumpy situations with Chicago. So maybe he's just in one that's allowing him to make some of those big plays. But I still think that he's kind of one of those guys who breaks a lot of tackles, but doesn't run away from a ton of them. So Montgomery probably settles back into that mid to back end running back two for me. Just worried potentially about him going stretches without some big plays. And then Gibbs, it's just wheels up because he is going to the moon. Last running back we're going to touch on is Keaton Mitchell. Just a quick kind of big ups here because I think he could be a league winner. Very small sample size for Keaton Mitchell in Baltimore, but over the past 2 weeks, he's got the fifth most rushing yards, the most yards per carry with 14.33 yards per tote. 80% of his 172 yards have come on those explosive runs. He's forced 12 missed tackles, which is second in that two-week span. He's got the most yards after contact with 144, and he's got 34 fantasy points in those 2 weeks with only 6.4 total expected fantasy points. So he has outscored his expectation by about 27.5 fantasy points. Just wanted to make sure I mentioned him here because this is kind of like a turbocharged version of what we wanted from J.K. Dobbins in this Baltimore offense. And J.K. Dobbins was kind of on his way to being what we hoped for. So Keaton Mitchell, still super low volume. He's getting like 3 carries per game. So you can't really plant your flag too hard. But if that volume could increase into like 10 carries per game, I think this is a guy that could be like a Devin Achane light from earlier this season. And I am in on that in the Baltimore run game. It's interesting. We've always wanted to attach to Baltimore. But now for some reason, there's a little bit of hesitance. Gus Edwards, he's like a top 18 running back or something going forward probably as well, just with the touchdowns that he's scoring and what he's doing in between the 20s, not just in the red zone as he's previously done. So I am attaching hard to that Baltimore run game. And I think the good part is that in season-long leagues, if your trade deadline hasn't passed, you could probably get these guys still for fairly cheap because they don't have a whole lot of trade or name value. Keaton Mitchell especially, like if you send out a trade offer for Keaton Mitchell, somebody could be seeing those 3 carries per game and thinking that they are pulling one over on you because they just got this guy off the waivers and now they're going to be able to flip him for something they can use. But little do they know that Keaton Mitchell could be one of those profiles that goes down the stretch and helps you win your league. So take a look at your roster because he will only fit certain rosters, right? I mean, if you need a consistent running back too, I wouldn't necessarily suggest him. But if you need a guy that you can have as a YOLO play in the flex spot, Keaton Mitchell is absolutely that, with only room to grow as far as volume. So love to see it there. All right, so we are going to move into wide receivers in a second on the True North Fantasy Pod. Just wanted to say thanks again to everybody for joining. We are on social media at True North FFB. I have dropped my rankings for this week, so you can go find those on Fantasy Pros. And if you search the experts, you can find them there. Working to get a little link on our kind of start page that I've got in our bio so folks can see some of the rankings there, but haven't gotten that up just yet. So go check it on Fantasy Pros if you want to see the whole gamut. I'm going to continue to tinker with those over the weekend. So if you have any rankings questions coming into Sunday, please feel free to shoot me a DM or message me on any of the socials. And I can give you some ideas on where some of those ranks are and how I've done some tinkering from here until Sunday, because we got to tinker with those rankings all the way up. To make sure we get them just right, because lots of stuff changes, lots of guys get injured, and other guys come into the forefront. So please go check them out. Let me know what you think. Let me know if they're egregiously bad or if they are pristine. And yeah, go follow on the social media. I want to give another big shout out to my friends at fantasypoints.com. Just giving them some love because the Fantasy Points data suite is absolutely next level, changing the game in the fantasy industry, and I've been reaping the benefits of it. Most of the data and stats that you're hearing on the show and on our social media, et cetera, are coming straight from the Fantasy Points data suite. So if you want to use what we use, go check out the Fantasy Points data suite. It's on a mega discount for the rest of the season because we're 2/3 of the way there. So go check it out for cheap for the rest of this season. A little bit of a teaser, and I guarantee you will be coming back to it next year because it's an incredible edge. It's been great for me as I've been digging. I go into my lineup decisions. I have a bunch of questions on what guys have been doing. I can check out what defenses are doing. I can check out what offenses are doing. I can filter it down to the granular details. It's good shit. It's good shit. So thanks to the boys over at fantasypoints.com for everything they're doing to support all of us fantasy heads to be better. And now getting into the wide receivers. I'm going to go a little bit different. I'm not going to go player for player giving player takes and breakdowns. I'm going to harken back to the days of old from True North Fantasy Football Podcast. And I'm going to do a little bit of trend spotting. And I'm going to zero in on the Seahawks wide receiver room because it's a bit of a puzzler. We've got three great players there producing at different levels. What's been happening lately and what do we do with them going forward? I think as I was looking into this wide receiver rooms or wide receiver room, there was some main themes that kind of popped up for me. First one being that Tyler Lockett might be the most underrated wide receiver ever. Next one would be that DK Metcalf is kind of fumbling a really nice bag that he could have here in Seattle. And our friend JSN, Jackson Smith in Jigba, he is well on his way. We just need to be patient. So those are the main themes that I took out of this wide receiver room. And I'm going to tell you how I got there a little bit. Looking at all three of them on the season so far, Tyler Lockett is the wide receiver 24 in PPR formats. DK Metcalf is the wide receiver 38, and JSN is the wide receiver 54. So the biggest surprise there probably is DK at wide receiver 38. I would probably have expected him to be up in that kind of top 15 range. Looking over the past 5 weeks, though, since week six, it's been a bit of a different story. Tyler Lockett's been the wide receiver 11. Jackson Smith in Jigba has been the wide receiver 22. And DK Metcalf has been the wide receiver 41. So it's not looking good for DK. As far as kind of the production that he's getting on the volume, he had his best weekly performance of the year in week 10, which was a positive sign. He was the wide receiver 15 with 16.8 fantasy points. But 10 weeks into the season, DK Metcalf capping out as the wide receiver 15 in any given week is just not good enough. He's only got one other week inside the top 20 so far. He's got 4 weeks outside of the top 30. So not really what you thought you were getting with that late third round, early fourth round pick. Looking at Tyler Lockett, he has three top 12 performances on the week. He's got another inside the top 20 with a wide receiver 9 finish, and everything else has been outside the top 40. So kind of the ultimate mixed bag here. Super boom or bust for Tyler Lockett, but very, very nice boom performances. And just every time we kind of pray for this motherfucker's downfall, he just rises back up like a motherfucking phoenix, you know what I'm saying? Like some Dumbledore shit or whatever. And he comes back and says, I am here and I can still do it. So love to see it for Tyler Lockett. Long-term expectations, I think he's probably the odd man out here, but for what he's doing for now with Geno, I think is great. And if he were to move on to a good situation after this, I would absolutely be buying into Lockett as one of those guys with a little bit of age on him where the market might be a little bit down. I'd be trying to capitalize on that because from what I've seen, he's still got it. And then Jackson Smith in Jigba, the first round rookie coming in, only got 2 weeks inside the top 24 so far. I know he's got those good performances over the past few weeks, like I mentioned, as the running back 22 over the past 5 weeks. But we didn't really necessarily expect ultimate performances from him coming into the season because he did have Tyler Lockett. He did have DK Metcalf. And we knew that they had some rapport with Geno as well as in this offense to where it was going to be pretty hard nut to crack for Jackson Smith and Jigba to eclipse either of them on the target totem pole. But I think he's making a little bit of headway, and where maybe the first few weeks of the season, we were like, shit, is this guy a massive bust? I think he's shown us signs that he can be that kind of top 20 pick, top 10-ish value that we thought he was coming out of the NFL draft. So I think this wide receiver room looks like it's in pretty good hands going forward. The biggest of those themes that I think I'm latching on to is the underperformance by DK Metcalf. Tyler Lockett's always been a little bit volatile, but always kind of as good or better than we expect him to. Like I said, always that possibility that this was kind of a washed year for Jackson Smith in Jigba as opposed to that big rookie breakout. But yeah, DK Metcalf has super underperformed. Looking at that 5-week sample that I was talking about, DK Metcalf and Jaxon Smith-Njigba are averaging just under 12 points per game. Tyler Lockett is just under 15 points per game. DK Metcalf, still the most targeted wide receiver with about 9 targets over the past 5 weeks. Remember, he does only have 4 games played in that 5-week span. He missed one, whereas Lockett and JSN have 5 games played in that span. But over those 5 weeks, Lockett's got about 7.5 targets per, and JSN has 5.5. So DK Metcalf is still getting the most targets. And even with those, he's not capitalizing, though. He's caught less than 50% of them, where the other two guys are over 75% catch rate on the targets that they've gotten. DK's yards per target is just 7.6, where JSN is at 9.4, Lockett at 8.9. DK has 6 end zone targets in those 5 weeks and 0 touchdowns on those 6 end zone targets. JSN has 0. Tyler Lockett only has 1 of those targets. So he's just getting, like, DK is getting opportunities that are conducive to wide receiver 1 performances, but he just ain't been it. I'm not thinking it's dire for the rest of the season. The Seahawks do have probably the best schedule for fantasy wide receivers over the next 5 weeks or so. And all of those opponents, too, they can score points. So I think game script is probably going to be in their favor to continue passing the ball. But I'm not expecting top 12 from DK. I'm expecting maybe top 24 is kind of the bar that I'm going to set for him, just so I'm not setting myself up for more massive disappointment here, right? DK and Lockett, I think the rest of the season, they're just going to be those boomer bust wide receiver twos. I think they definitely reach those destinations in different ways, though. With DK, he's leaving a shitload of meat on the bone, and you really hope he can gobble it up. But for Lockett, this is just what he is. He's that boomer bust guy, and you start him because those booms are just super, super nice. So that's where you're treating those two guys as the main startable options in DK and Lockett. I think DK has fumbled a little bit of that bag, but like I said at the top of the show, there is room for him to still stack up the cheddar and take that to the bank, deposit it for a solid fantasy season. But he's behind the 8 ball as far as paying off that ADP. There is no lying about that. Jaxon Smith-Njigba, I think, like, your takes on him have to just be strictly dynasty, right? Because he is one of those, right now he's kind of an if you have to wide receiver 3 flex play. What we're really excited about is those dynasty shares and going forward, and maybe the potential for this team to find a way to get an elite quarterback under center that's not Geno Smith, one of those young guys that JSN can grow with. So I think for the rest of the season, he is likely to be that third wheel as opposed to being able to take over Lockett's role. But we're just looking for those continued positive signs from JSN, and we're getting them right now, so it's great. My ranks on these guys for week 11, just as we go in, DK Metcalf is the wide receiver 18. I'm still trusting in that increased opportunity. Tyler Lockett is the wide receiver 25, and I have JSN as the wide receiver 45. One of those if you have to flex plays, like I said. So do with the Seahawks wide receivers what you will, but there are the expectations. That's how it's laid out, and you just got to play it out now. You have just got to play it out. That's what I got on this episode. Just a nice little quick one, diving into some situations there. Wanted to bang one out because, like I said, I hadn't got one in a couple of weeks. Wanted to keep getting some content up for the good people. So make sure you go follow those socials. I've been having a lot of fun on Instagram with some graphics and stuff. So go check them out. Leave a like there. Drop a comment. Let's get some engagement going over on the IG, on all the socials, really. Go check it out on Twitter. You can follow us at True North FFB. TikTok's going as well. And then we are just True North Fantasy Football on Facebook. What helps the most is subscribing to that YouTube channel, liking, leaving a comment. That is what helps the most. Get that algorithm going for us. Get it pumping us up to other people and get some more eyes on the show, on the brand. We really appreciate it. So thanks, everybody, for tuning in. Have a great week 11. It's the stretch run. It's the stretch run. So make those sound fantasy decisions. Get in my DMs if you have questions. Let me know what you need. If I have to go into the Fantasy Points data suite and research something to give you an informed take, I would love to do so. So at True North FFB. Week 11 is upon us. Hope you get those W's. Hope you stack that cheddar. Until next week, peace.